With so much information available, it's important for you to be able to separate the facts from fiction when it comes to the menopause. Many women are uncertain if the changes they experience at that time are normal. How long will they last? Why are they happening? And where do you find the answers to all those questions? Well, we're not only talking about menopause today, we're also featuring a great exercise segment with Sean, and then join us in the kitchen. We're going to cook a delicious cranberry maple butter together. Stay with us as we explore and discover. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. I'm Dr. Nerida and I'm glad you've joined me today. Go Healthy for Good is live every Monday to Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Go Healthy Live. If you go to our website, you'll find all of our recipes and a full library of our past shows. The website address is hopetv.org/gohealthy. Now, separating menopause facts from fiction, understanding why not everyone experiences the same symptoms, and knowing what treatments are available can help make this a smooth transition. I have two wonderful experts with me today. You really don't want to miss our show. Before we start our discussion, let me share a video with you. Take a look at this.
Menopause is a natural event women mostly face around the age of 45 to 55. The menopause takes place after your last ovulation and marks the end of your fertile period. Before period, your hormones need to find a new balance. Your body changes because your ovaries produce less estrogen hormone. These changes can be pretty bothersome. During the period before menopause, you might have physical as well as psychological complaints. Common physical complaints are irregular menstrual periods, hot flashes that can last for a few seconds up to minutes, heavy sweating, fatigue, muscle aches, heart palpitations, headaches, dizziness, sore breasts, sensitive skin, dry hair and hair loss. The vagina becomes drier and the skin also becomes thinner because of dropped female hormones level. Besides that, aging, childbirth and lower production of estrogen may cause prolapses. This may cause painful sexual intercourse, loss of libido, vaginal discharge, itching, urinary tract infection, urinary incontinence. During such periods, your body is having a tough time, which can also cause psychological complaints. For some women, it is difficult to accept that they are no longer fertile. Other psychological complaints are mood swings, fatigue, apathy. A lot of women don't know that you have the risk of osteoporosis because of decreased female hormones. Advice about menopause. Keep the intake of coffee, tea, and spicy food to a minimum. These foods may intensify the menopause complaints. Consume enough dairy products and make sure that you get sufficient exercise to prevent osteoporosis. Eat healthy and varied in order to prevent deficiency of nutrients. Make sure you get enough sleep. If your medical complaints are bothersome, a doctor may prescribe hormonal treatments. Because in the end, your complaints are caused by the ovaries and are no longer producing hormones.
Joining me today is Dr. Wen Shen, a board-certified OBGYN and assistant professor of gynecology and obstetrics at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine and a member of the National Menopause Association. Welcome, Dr. Shen.
Thank you.
And then also joining us is Dr. James Simon, an OBGYN board-certified and reproductive endocrinologist and past president of the North American Menopause Society and the Washington Gynecological Society, currently sitting on the board of the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health. Welcome, Dr. Simon.
Welcome. Thank you.
It's good to have you here. Now, tell me, what we're talking primarily two hormones, aren't we? Estrogen and progesterone. So what does estrogen do for a woman?
Well, it's more a question of what estrogen doesn't do for a woman.
Okay.
But when it goes down, as was shown in your video, it leads to all of the symptoms that we commonly associate with the menopause. Those that are physical, like hot flashes and night sweats and vaginal dryness and pain with sex, but some that we often neglect, like muscle aches and pains and joint stiffness, which are very common side effects of low estrogen. Mm. Those can synergize, if you will, and adversely affect a woman's sleep. And if we're not sleeping, none of us are doing very well.
No, that's right. Now, Dr. Wen, what does the progesterone do? Because we're also talking progesterone, and those symptoms are also quite noticeable, aren't they?
Right. Progesterone, it also decreases after the menopause, and that can also contribute to the hot flashes and to the disturbed sleep at night. It also is necessary with regards to preventing uterine cancers for a woman who does take estrogen supplements after menopause. So it is normally felt to be a relaxing hormone. So for example, when a woman is pregnant, the progesterone helps relax her bones, her joints. So when that decreases, that may also contribute to a woman's sense of joint pains and other symptoms.
Okay. Now, Dr. Simon, why is it that at around the age of 50, well, I think the average age is 51, isn't it, that women go through the menopause?
Right.
Why is it that these hormones drop? What's the
actual mechanism? Hormones are made in the ovaries. They're made because they're essential for the process of ovulation, conception, and maintenance of a pregnancy. And they're made by the egg when it grows, develops, and after it ovulates. And so what happens is a woman's body basically runs out of eggs. She's born with a certain number, and every single month when she has a menstrual cycle, she loses a bunch, and eventually she runs out. Mm. And on average, that's around age 51. Some women much earlier, a few women
right.
A few years later.
So women can go through an early, a premature menopause. What sort of age might we talk about there?
Yeah, we don't normally get too concerned if a woman goes through menopause after age 40. But before age 40, we begin to have some concerns that there may be other reasons for premature menopause or cessation of menstrual cycles. And certainly before age 35, we usually look for a secondary reason. And it's even more important for those women, those younger women, who are having their menopause early to consider some hormone therapy, because for them, their menopause time is going to be dramatically increased.
Mm. What about women who have a late menopause? How late should we start to worry about that? When?
I don't think we ever worry about it being too late. For example, I have several patients who are past 58 and who are still menstruating. Besides the annoyance factor, every year they come in and they said, really? Seriously? You know, I'm so done with this. But there are certain protective factors that they continue to receive with regards to their bones, to their heart health. But on the other hand, they do have to be more careful about breast health and possibility of breast cancer. So it's a trade-off, but I don't think we ever worry about somebody having a late menopause. There's not a medical reason.
That's interesting.
There are very few of them. So when we talk about those women after, say, 54 or 55, we're really talking about less than about 2% of all the women could be in those age groups. And so it's really not too many. That's why they stand out for both of us or all three of us in the office when they come in at age 58 still having their periods.
Right. Well, you know, I'm British trained, and we always are concerned if they go past 55. Are these really periods, or are they abnormal bleeding? Are they telling us that there's actually some endometrial cancer going on here? And so we usually would be just monitoring perhaps ultrasound and some biopsy in those in that particular age group. But maybe practice is different here in the States. Yeah.
So I do. Obviously, one of the questions is how regular is their menstrual cycle, if they're having abnormal bleeding, or if this is normal menstrual cycles for them. The bleeding's not any heavier, not any more frequent. And if I ever do have questions, I will send them for the transvaginal ultrasound. I will also get an FSH and estradiol level if I think that they're having post-menopausal bleeding, that this is not just regular menstruation, but rather abnormal, if I have any inkling that it could be hyperplasia or endometrial cancer.
Sure.
A good clue to reassure women out there who are over 55 that their bleeding is nothing to be worried about is if they continue to have those premenstrual symptoms, breast tenderness, bloating, back pain, mood changes, and those kinds of things.
All the joys of
of premenstrual symptomatology. Those are very reassuring that this is not abnormal bleeding, but in fact is a continuation of the menstrual cycle.
Right, because it has the same pattern. Now, the video mentioned some of the short-term effects of the menopause. What about the longer-term effects, Jim? Tell us, what do women, you know, we talked about the hot flushes and the night sweats and things. What about the long-term effects?
Yeah, one of the problems with the fall in estrogen after menopause is that certain of the protective effects go away. And two of the major protective effects that we believe go away when estrogen diminishes dramatically at menopause are prevention of cardiovascular aging and, in fact, the softness of the arteries. You know, we talk about hardening of the arteries.
Right.
Well, the estrogen tends to relax and soften the arteries. And the other is it prevents all of us, men and women, from losing bone and developing osteoporosis. And both of those are long-standing problems that change slowly following menopause, but are cumulative, so the longer after menopause happens, the more likely it is there'll be problems in those two arenas.
Right. Well, coming up next, Justin's waiting for us in the kitchen with a fruity spread. Don't move, we'll be right back.
trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me.
Welcome back. Justin, it smells wonderful in here. What's up?
Oh, we're going to make something absolutely delicious.
Really?
Cranberry maple spread.
Oh.
I know. I know.
I love maple syrup. Anything with maple syrup.
Yes.
You know, I'm naughty. I sweeten my my soy yogurt with maple syrup.
Naughty.
Oh, yeah.
Naughty.
So this looks like something else I could sweeten my yogurt.
Yeah. And relatively healthy, too.
Great. What's in it?
Well, let me tell you. We've got just one large bag of fresh cranberries, half a cup of water, half a cup of pure maple syrup, half a teaspoon of coriander, an eighth of a teaspoon of cardamom, half a teaspoon of vanilla, and optional 6 tablespoons of raw sugar.
Those are for the sweet people.
I'm guessing you put in the 6.
Oh, definitely not.
Oh, okay.
No.
Sure, sure. I believe
you. I'm the one that eats lemons fresh. You're the one that eats onions fresh. I eat lemons fresh.
That's right. Okay, well, this is a really easy recipe.
Okay.
So first you just take that bag of cranberries, you put it in some water and boil it down until the cranberries split, okay?
Great.
And then you just take your handy little hand blender here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to whiz these berries up.
Stick blenders are so handy, aren't they?
Yeah,
they
are.
Save all those dishes. Yeah.
One pot. That's how I like to cook.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so that's kind of sort of blended up.
Great. You want me to take that from you?
Oh man, doesn't that smell great?
Oh yeah, that really released the.
Sometimes I like to get some of those cranberries and just eat them raw, straight out of the bag. What can I say? Okay, so we're going to put all our ingredients.
Yeah, we're supposed
here.
To mush them up today.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. We'll just get everything.
Maple syrup.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, do you like the real thing?
Oh, the real thing.
Straight out of the tree, right? most
well, I've never been to Canada, so not yet. Not yet.
You know, most maple syrup you buy in the stores never saw the inside of a maple tree.
That's true. I've learned that. And they put the label on it and I've been tricked before. I've got it home and I've turned it around and gone, no. It's got maple flavoring.
Exactly.
Oh, this is the real deal.
Exactly. So we'll put a little of this, a little of that, some coriander and some cardamom.
I love cardamom.
Oh, it just gives it this kind of warm, satisfying.
It is. Mm. Great for the winter.
So you cook this down for 25 minutes, mm-hmm. and then at the very end, you add just a little bit of vanilla. I'll just go ahead and do it now.
Yeah, because we're not going to be standing here for 25 minutes, are we?
Right.
We're not.
And through the magic of television, this recipe is done and done.
Wow.
Yes.
So, shall we get to the best part of the show?
The very best part is the part where we take our little tiny spoons.
Look how thick that becomes.
Yeah.
That's like a proper jelly, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ding. Cheers.
Mm.
Mm-mm.
I mean, put that on your bread, put that on your waffles.
Waffles for breakfast.
Or
pancakes.
Just eat it straight. I noticed that for the first time ever, you took a larger sample than I did.
Yes, I know. That's because I tasted it a few minutes ago.
You tasted it earlier.
And I thought, I'm not going to miss out today.
Okay.
But, you know, that would also be really nice to flavor up some plain yogurt or if you're making, some natural ice cream or...
Now,
that is really nice.
And it's cranberries. And cranberries are great for...
Your eyes.
Your eyes.
It's got all those anthocyanins and antioxidants. Good for the eyes, good for the heart.
Right. Yeah. Red. It's red, so it's got antioxidants.
Yeah.
That's what I've learned from it.
That's right. Now, let's take a look at this short video. Joanna shares here on the joys of menopause. Watch this.
For me, what had happened was my hair started to fall out. And I didn't know what was going on. And I thought that I had some kind of disease. And then I had these things where I would have like terrible, terrible night sweats. And it happened a few times and I thought it was normal. I thought, oh, you know, I must have had a bad nightmare or something. But along with the hair falling out is what made me like concerned that something was amiss. So finally I went to my gynecologist and I was talking to her and I was just doing like a regular checkup. And then I said, hey, by the way, I have these things that are happening to me. She looked at me and she goes, girl, you're getting old. It's starting to happen now. I was like, what? She goes, you're starting to get into a perimenopause phase. And it's going to continue to happen. And these things are going to start to happen. And these different changes are going to happen. And so that when I found all this stuff out, I was like, oh, really? That's it? That's all it is? Oh, thank God. I was really happy because now I could understand what was going on.
Understanding what was going on really helps, doesn't it? Because if we don't know, we become very anxious. And if you know what it is, you know what to expect, it really helps. So yes. Now, 20 years ago, we were dishing out hormone replacement therapy for symptoms like this. Oh, you don't need to put up with that. Here, have a pill. But something changed all that. What happened?
Well, the preliminary results of WHI that came out basically alarmed everybody with regards to the use of specific hormone therapy that showed increased risk for breast cancer and heart attacks and stroke. And unfortunately, that trial was based on women who were much, much older than the average menopause patient. So the average age in the WHI population was about 61, 62. And as we mentioned before, the average age of menopause for most women is around 51. Yeah. And that's when most women would be experiencing all those symptoms. And that's when they would be needing the hormone therapy, not when they're 62, because most women are over it by then. So
why were women staying on? Was it that they started at 50 and they were just staying on that long, or did they start late?
Well, a lot of women stayed on because back then we felt that there was a lot of preventive benefits to staying on. So we were telling our patients, as long as they weren't having any side effects, just stay on it. You know, it helps you feel better. And if they came off of the hormone therapy, they may experience hot flashes again. So that was part of the reason. I mean, there are still women who continue hormone therapy mm-hmm. for a long time. And that's because they're not able to come off. Whenever they try to come off, they get really bad hot flashes again, and the mood swings come back again. And
then it's a balance between how difficult life becomes
exactly.
and taking that risk. Now, Dr. Jim, what happened? That was an older group. And it's really hard now to study.
Let me try and put this all together, because everything we've said, I think, actually fits together. So give me a second to go one step back, to go two steps forward.
Please do.
Remember we talked about estrogen going down and causing such long-term things as cardiovascular disease, hardening of the arteries, and osteoporosis. The big unanswered question was, could you prevent all that by giving hormones to women? Because if the hormones go down and it causes it, if you give hormones, the presumption is you can prevent it or treat it.
Because you're simply replacing a deficiency.
Exactly. It makes perfect sense. Mm. We give insulin for diabetes, we make the diabetes better.
Right.
So the theory was, if we gave hormones back to women, that we would be able to prevent or treat all those bad things down the road.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to design a study, this really important study that we call the WHI, or the Women's Health Initiative, in order to do that study, to find out if hormones can prevent those things, you have to study old enough women who have heart attacks. You can't start at 50 and study 100,000 women for 25 years until somebody has a heart attack. You start with a bunch of women who are at risk for heart attacks because of their age. Mm-hmm. And here's where we got into the catch-22. The results of that study showed that hormones can make some of those things worse, not better.
Right.
But those were older women, not the ones with symptoms, who were younger. Mm-hmm. And in fact, women with symptoms were actually excluded from being in that big study. So it's very important not to confuse apples, long-term heart attacks, strokes, and osteoporosis, and short-term benefits for the treatment of all of these symptoms we've been talking about. Nor should we confuse the risks, which were increased in the older women but didn't really exist in the younger women, even the younger women in that study.
And that has now been further researched, and that is established. So coming back to this problem of some women who go on hormone replacement therapy find it difficult to get off it. The hot flushes just persist and life is miserable. They end up running back to the age. What do you do then?
Well, there are some women who just cannot get off. Every time they try, their symptoms come right back. But that also is a relatively small percentage of the total. And so many women can, for the period of 2, 3, 4, 5 years, use their hormones safely and effectively, and then they go off and they're fine, or they have minor symptoms. Mm-hmm. For those that need to go back on, we put them back on.
And then weaning is important, isn't it, as you're coming off, to come off slowly, not just stop overnight, right?
Well, the studies that have been done looking at if weaning versus cold turkey, mm-hmm. really there isn't a significant difference. So depending on the patient, I think most of my patients have felt more comfortable with weaning off because they just feel that's a more physiologic process for them. But the clinical trials haven't really shown any
advantage
to weaning versus going cold turkey.
There may be a little advantage to weaning, but I agree that there's really no difference. The advantage is that we might find a level of hormones, a lower dose,
right,
below which that particular patient can't be weaned. But at least now we've found a lower dose.
Yes.
And the thought is that the lower dose would be safer.
Lower risk. All right. Well, that makes sense. Sean, our trainer's up next, so get off the couch, get ready to move. But first, let's look at today's medical news report. In the headlines today, menopause affects memory, bladder control and menopause not linked, and physicians back off the fiscal cliff. A recent study confirmed what women have been telling us for years, that verbal learning and memory deteriorate as they transition through menopause. Researchers from New York have shown that compared to pre-menopause, women early in post-menopause fared worse on verbal learning, verbal memory, and attention or working memory. Estrogen levels were also associated with fine motor skills. These changes were independent of mood symptoms, hot flashes, sleep disruptions, and anxiety. So ladies, it's not all in the mind. It's really happening to you. But hang in there. You are not alone. Menopause may have little, if any, effect on the risk for urinary incontinence, according to a major epidemiological review just published by French researchers. Hormone replacement therapy, or HRT, may make some forms of urinary incontinence better or worse depending on the type of incontinence and the way that HRT is delivered. Results linked systemic HRT to worsening symptoms, while topical estrogen significantly improved symptoms of overactive bladder. So if you have bladder control problems, you should discuss that with your doctor and see if topical estrogen is right for you. There was general relief amongst the medical fraternity that the fiscal cliff deal was reached on New Year's Day. In the nick of time, the bill passed the Senate at 2 a.m. and was signed off by President Obama on Thursday last week. This delays by another year the 26.5% cut in physician reimbursement that was scheduled by the Medicare Sustainable Growth Rate formula. There are, I'm sure, some hard decisions ahead in dealing with the financial challenge of providing medical care for all in this country. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's Medical News Report.
Declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of His hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they reveal knowledge. They have no speech, they use no words, no sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out into all the earth. Their words to the ends of the world.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. Sean, what you got for us?
All right, so today I got some dumbbells. You know, we normally start our routine, right? So we're going to get warmed up, do some dynamic exercises.
Right. All right?
So let's start with some jumping jacks. We'll do five.
All righty.
Three, two, and one. Go. One, two, three, four, and five. All right, what I want you to do is pick up your knees. All right, just pick them up. And we're going to alternate, bring it all the way up. Again, preparing the body for movement. If you're on the couch, come off the couch, join us.
You won't be able to do this on the couch.
You have no excuses in the new year, right? No excuses.
No. Right?
So what I want you to do is take this leg here and turn it to the side. Alternate. These are dynamic exercises, again, preparing the body for movement, okay? We may not be using each and every region, but it's good just to get stretched out, okay?
Yeah.
The first exercise, we're going to grab the dumbbells.
All right.
These are 100 pounders. I just label them as five, right?
Yeah, just to fool me, because you're always into fooling me.
All right, so what we're going to do, we're going to do a lateral lunge, okay?
All right.
But when we come up from the lateral lunge, we're going to do a bicep curl. So two exercises, working the legs and then the bicep area, okay? Everybody wants nice legs, nice arms. So we're going to go to the right first in three, two, and one. All the way down, bring it here, eyes forward, back up with a bicep curl, okay? Then switch sides, bring it down. Here. So that leg is getting a nice workout. Then your biceps get a nice workout. Put it down. Here. All right, go ahead. One more time. Again, working the quad, working the biceps. All right. So you can do a total of about 20, where you consider that side one, that side two, and just keep going to 20.
So that would be one.
Exactly.
Yep.
Or one, two, depending on you, all right?
Right.
You can set your timer for 30 seconds, you know, and you can keep going for the 30 seconds, take about 10, 20 second rest, and then repeat it again.
Great.
All right, so the next exercise, since we worked some biceps, some leg, we're gonna now shape up the delts, right?
Okay.
The arm a little bit. So we're gonna go forward and to the side. Forward, when you get here, your arm should be parallel to the ground and here. Same thing like we did before. You can count each one as a rep, or you can do one. One. Two. Two. Three. Three. One more. Four. And four. Okay?
Yep.
You work your bicep, which is everybody wants a nice glamour muscle, and then your delt. Okay?
Yeah.
So we're going to put it down here.
Alrighty.
And we're just going to use one weight for now.
And
we're going to put one hand down. And we're going to go into this plank position, working the entire core. Okay?
Okay.
The body's stable. And this hand is going to grab the weight. You're going to bring it to your chest. Look up. Bring it all the way up. Back to your chest. and down, okay? So what I want you to do is do about 10 on this side. Make sure you're breathing, inhaling through your nose, exhaling through your mouth. So you will feel your triceps work a little bit right behind the arm. And you just worked a little bit of your delt. Let's switch sides. So you're going to get a little bit of your delt burning, all right? Burning is good. Don't run away from the burn. All right, let's do four on this side. 3, 2, 1. All the way down. All the way up. Remember, these are hundreds, so don't be fooled by the 5 pounds. Okay? I'm stronger than you, but I look. All the way up. All right. And perfect, okay? What you can do is mix it up. If you feel like you're getting a little bit more advanced, a little bit stronger, you can put both hands on here and alternate. So I'll show you what it looks like.
Hmm.
Feet about shoulder width apart.
Okay.
And you go here. And then alternate. Okay. Now, do not try this if you have any wrist issues or your core is not fully able to be on an unstable and not level floor.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
You don't want any risks, all right, involved in this because...
No, because there's you're quite unstable. You're on just on two points, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So once you put that weight here, all that weight is going down this arm, and that's the last thing you want to do is risk of any injury, okay? Because this is what can happen.
Right.
Hands here, you fall, and then you're going to call and email and say, Sean told me to do it.
Yeah, because these weights have got quite a small...
Yeah, yours are fives, though. Those are real fives.
Those are real fives. Those yours are hundreds,
aren't
they?
These are hundreds.
Oh, I see.
They look alike, but trust me, they're different.
I think you're telling Porky.
You going to start that?
You better cool us down.
All right, so we start off with a dynamic exercise to warm us up.
Yep.
You start your timer. You could do reps. You could do time. And then you got to cool down, all right? Take a nice deep breath. I like to inhale through the nose. Exhale through the mouth. One more time. And blow out, okay? Feet nice and wide. You can shake your hands out, especially your wrist, if your hands were on the weight.
On the weights, yep.
Go around a circle. Do a couple revolutions. And then go the opposite direction, okay? Hands down. Reach. Stretch out those arms, the lower back, and come up nice and slow, like a cat.
Okay.
Let's do it again.
Alrighty.
I'm just joking. Good job.
Thank you.
Very welcome.
That was great.
Very welcome.
We're getting into a new year.
Absolutely.
In just a minute, I'm going to answer some questions that you've sent me during our previous shows. But first, here's another Ageless Advantage spot. Enjoy.
Can you do anything today to prevent future bone fractures? Women were surveyed in 1976 and again 25 years later in 2001. When asked about risk fractures and physical activity, interesting results surfaced. The women who were the most physically active in 1976 were almost 40% less likely to have a wrist fracture by 2001. Physical activity had a protective effect. Building strong bones is another ageless advantage.
Welcome back. Did you miss a previous episode or you want to download one of our recipes? Then visit our website at hopetv.org/gohealthy. We're also on iTunes. Just look for our free video podcast there. Now I want to thank you for posting your comments and your questions on Facebook. I love to hear from you. And here are some questions that we didn't have a chance to answer on our previous shows or maybe even on Facebook. Cindy texted and she writes, I was wondering how many meals a day do we need and what amount does it have to be? Well, Cindy, 2 meals a day is adequate. And I encourage people who have diabetes especially to try and do 2 meals a day. Because those 2 meals would be breakfast and lunch. And I find what works well for me is I'll have breakfast. These are days that I don't work, or maybe even something like today I did it here at work. Breakfast at about 9, lunch at about 3 or 4. That's me done for the day. It cuts down on dishes, it cuts down on food preparation, and it also keeps you nice and trim because you're not eating a heavy meal in the evening when you're actually in storage mode. So 2 meals a day is good, but not everyone can do it, especially if you have a hard physical job. then it's 3 meals a day. You know, when I'm working on that delivery suite, pulling all those babies out, I need 3 meals and then some if I've got a 14-hour day. So everyone's a little bit different. Now, someone called and said that their mother had breast cancer and had had a mastectomy. And they were asking, what are the risks for them and their daughters of having breast cancer, especially if they take birth control pills? Well, yes, you are bringing up a good point that breast cancer in the family does increase the risk if it's a sister or a mother. And so that risk is significantly increased. You actually can go online and find a calculator where you can put in all your different factors and it will give you your personal risk. And what you find is that the birth control pill will increase it slightly. It depends at what age you take the birth control pills and how long you stay on them. So that can change the risks quite significantly. And then if it's just one mother or sister, or if it's two, and those risks significantly go up. So yes, you do need to be careful. You need to be very aware. You need to be having your mammograms. Evelyn asked, I suffer with food allergies. Are there any supplements I should take? And what advice can you give me? Work out what foods you're allergic to. And you may need to go on an elimination diet and slowly introduce those foods. And we should really cover this in a program coming up. But you can work out which foods, the ones that you have an intolerance, perhaps not an allergy, but an intolerance to, or even an allergy. And then eliminate those from your diet. You really don't need those. In terms of supplements, sometimes food allergies can be a sign of adrenal fatigue, and then you really need to be looking after your whole body. Supplements alone will not be sufficient. So that's the advice I have for you. I want to thank you for sending your questions. Keep them coming. If you've got a question on menopause, then call us. Our lines are now open, 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Now, don't you think women going through menopause should receive some special treatment? Take a look at what these ladies think.
I think that being in menopause should afford every woman special treatment. I think we have earned it.
People think we're crazy, but we're not crazy. We're just going through something.
What would be really great is if there were special areas of buses, subways, and restaurants for women in menopause. Ideally, right under the air vents.
Oh, definitely you should be afforded special treatment for going through menopause on a daily basis.
Any spa treatment with appropriate nibbles.
Gym memberships, of course. Free vitamins and all those health benefits. We should get that.
Jewelry, any kind of riches that could be bestowed upon me, I would be fine with.
I want a ring, I want a bracelet, I want a car.
And if we're honored, maybe we won't be as, you know, irritable and sweaty like this.
How about you? Would you like a lot of riches bestowed upon you, Dr. Shen?
More than that, I really agree with the person who said special areas on buses, trains, restaurants, and to keep us comfortable. It's just not fair to have to be in the same temperature as everybody else.
Well, that's true. You need the cooler section.
So exactly.
You'd like to be by the open windows.
Absolutely.
Well, you don't ask for much.
No.
Don't need the riches. No.
No.
Do men have menopause?
Men can have menopause.
Tell us all about that.
Absolutely. You know, we're talking about estrogen going down after a woman's menopause because she runs out of eggs.
Right.
Well, certain medications and certain diseases like prostate cancer are treated with medication or other treatments like radiation that put a man's testosterone hormone, which is his estrogen, if you will, very low. And he has hot flashes and night sweats and disturbed sleep and osteoporosis and joint stiffness and all the same symptoms.
Wow.
But usually at an older age.
Right. And that would be from medication, not from...
Or disease, as opposed to menopause, which occurs naturally for women.
Right. Now, coming back to the task at hand, you've been involved in research Dr. Simon, some of these newer drugs that are being used that perhaps don't carry the risks that long-term estrogen replacement might have. Tell us about some of them.
So because of fears of estrogen and because of real legitimate side effects of estrogen, for some, a small percentage of women, there's
and
been...
And for women with breast cancer.
Yes, absolutely, or women who cannot or will not take estrogen.
Right.
There are a number of medications in development. None are currently FDA approved that are not estrogens and are not hormones, but are effective in the treatment of hot flashes and night sweats. And some of them fall under the category of medications for depression, which are being used at a different dose, lower dose, so they don't have the same side effects. Mm-hmm. And some have actually been used for pain syndromes, although they're not narcotics,
okay,
to reduce those symptoms. And we think they'll be approved, maybe, with a little luck, and available for women sometime in this next calendar year.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, well done. I want to applaud you and your research team, and I know
there
are lots.
Hard.
Yeah, that's great. Now, Dr. Shen, tell us, bioidentical hormones are the buzzword out there. Tell us what your opinion is about, or what the evidence is about bioidentical hormone therapy.
Right. Basically, all the hormones that are being marketed that are FDA approved are a form of bioidentical. I think that a lot of what is being marketed as bioidentical is really erroneous in their marketing, and they tout themselves as being safer than the available FDA approved estrogens, which is really not true, because estrogen is estrogen, be it in a different formulation such as estrone or estriol, and there's every possibility that they could be just as dangerous for women with breast cancer or uterine cancer. And so women need to be very careful about buying into the whole bioidentical market.
Right. And really what you're saying then, estrogen comes in three different forms.
Right.
Estrone, estradiol, estriol.
Right.
And the one that we measure in the blood is the estradiol.
Right.
Bioidentical means it's identical to the molecule that we have in our bodies, but the research hasn't been done. Is that really what you're saying?
Right. With the efficacy and, all, more importantly, the safety. Okay. So a lot is being assumed that because these are different molecules from the estradiol that mm-hmm. is found in most FDA-approved estrogen therapies, that they would be safer. And that is not necessarily true.
No, that is an assumption.
Right. So I warn all my patients about that when they come to me having been placed on bioidenticals by another provider.
Right. Now, I think we have a caller on the line from Canada. Hello, welcome to Go Healthy. What's your question for my experts this evening?
Hi, good evening.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my question. My question is just concerning health risks for women due to excess estrogen or estrogen-related diseases, and specifically including breast cancer, and also for premenopausal women, like issues like uterine fibroids, uterine cancer, or fibrocystic breast disease. My question is just, is iodine helpful? I've come across this, and I don't know if it's a popular thing, but what's your opinion of using iodine? I've heard that it helps to convert estrogen to estriol. Not a health professional, but What do you think of that?
Dr. Simon, can you answer that one?
Okay, so there are a couple of questions.
Yes.
There. And I think the first one has to do with, we'll take the second one first, and whether iodine can help you convert your estrogen to a safer form in your body. And the answer to that is no. Simple, straightforward, no.
No, iodine doesn't come into that.
Iodine, very good for cuts and scrapes as an antiseptic, won't help you.
Good for the thyroid.
Good for the thyroid, but it won't help you convert your estrogen in some miraculous way to a less active form or a less risky form. I think that's really needs to be clear. I think that there's also a lot of misconception about the different estrogens and their risks, and this gets back to our discussion about the bioidenticals. And both in Canada, for the caller, and in the U.S., medications that are approved by Health Canada or by the FDA come with a package insert. Big, long piece of paper that tells you everything that could possibly happen to you if you take that medication, including a lot of things that we're worried about, like breast cancer, which the caller asked about.
Sure.
When you get a bioidentical, it doesn't come with a package insert, so because it's compounded in a pharmacy. And so the perception is, if it doesn't tell you that it has these same risks,
then
as was just stated,
it.
Then they're not there. That's just not true.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Now, there was also the question about excess estrogen, but this caller was referring to premenopause, so I'm not sure if they're talking about just a person who is estrogen, perhaps what we might call estrogen dominant. They're perhaps overweight, therefore they've got higher levels of estrogen on board. So that, would you like to comment about that, Dr. Shen?
Right. So, yes, as we know, women who are obese, have high BMIs, are at increased risk for breast cancer, uterine cancer, because they are hyperestrogenic, because estrogen is made in the fat cells in the body, so they have more estrogen. So yes, that does increase a woman's risk if she's hyperestrogenic.
And the risk is increased for breast cancer and for endometrial cancer,
right,
isn't it?
Uterine cancer, yes.
Yeah. And so if someone, you know, I always encourage my ladies, if they have one of those things, get their weight down, because the other one is around the corner.
Right. Yes.
And I've actually had to treat a friend who got both at a very young age. It's very tragic. You know?
Very tragic. Remember that estrogens do good and bad things, but they're all related to growth. So estrogen makes your skin grow, your hair grow, your nails grow, all that's good. Makes your bones grow, makes the vaginal cells grow, all that's good. But it also makes the uterine lining grow that can, if it's overgrown, become cancerous, can make breast cancer cells that are inherent, believe it or not, in all women at some point, grow and become an escape from the normal immune system, which clears them out without any problem.
Any fuss.
Yes.
Now, there are some lifestyle changes that women can do that can really ameliorate the effect of menopausal symptoms. Give us some of those, Dr. Shen.
Right. So one of the simplest things that I advise my patients who are perimenopausal and menopausal is they don't even have to do anything really fancy. Just walking is one of the best exercises a woman can do. She doesn't have to spend a lot of money. There's less risk of injury. And for women who don't have a treadmill or live near a track that she can go to, I was in the mall early Saturday morning, and there were all these people power walking around the mall.
Right.
That's excellent. It's temperature controlled. There's no obstacles in the ground that you can trip over. And that's one of the best exercises for your cardiovascular system, for the major large bones of your body, and for your core strength. And that helps in many, many ways.
Great.
So I try to advise my patients on things that are life-friendly, because not everybody can get to the gym.
Right.
And most of my patients are busy at work and then have family responsibilities. And if they can just walk.
Mm-hmm. Great. And Dr. Jim, what advice, what lifestyle advice do you give your patients?
Well, I would say that by and large, most of us, at least in Canada and the U.S., we eat too much. We have the wonderful abundance that the earth has provided us, and we just consume too much. And we need to balance our carbohydrates and our proteins and everything, and just eat a little less, keep moving, and
That's right. And women who lose 5 pounds around the menopause actually almost don't experience hot flashes. Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Simon. Thank you, Dr. Shen. It's been great having you on the show. Now, don't let menopause get you down. Ladies, you've mastered so many things in your lifetime. This is just another change that you can go through successfully. Think of the advantages that it brings rather than focusing on all the disadvantages. So cut yourself a bit of slack. Your brain may not be as sharp for a while, and you may be a little bit more clumsy, but it's not going to last forever. If it's really rough and you're not coping, think about walking, think about losing some weight. That will definitely help. And work with your healthcare provider to make the transition as smooth as possible. There's lots of options out there for symptom relief. I want to thank you for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. On tomorrow's show, we're discussing what you can do to avoid and treat winter coughs and colds. Don't miss it. We'll see you then.